direct everybody to the Fairgrounds Racing Podcast, Chad Schexnader, which is Schexnola on Twitter, and Mikey D, Mikey DiLiberto, guiding you through this card and every big day at the Fairgrounds. Chad, I'm actually coming back to town Easter week, so I might see you again.
Nice. Well, Easter week's a big crawfish week, so hit me up. We'll get some crawfish.
It's a deal. My wife's coming. I taught her how to crack crab last year in Ocean City, Maryland. And so let's see about getting her some mud bugs, which I think she would like. Yeah. All right?
My eight-year-old loves to peel them. He knows how to peel them now, so your wife can just enjoy it. He'll just peel it for her.
Perfect. I love it. Chad, thanks so much. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Good luck to you.
Chad Schexnader, a lot of fun. And he and Mike DiLiberto, the head clocker, of course, at Fairgrounds, FGNO, Fairgrounds, New Orleans. Let's take our only break of the morning and hustle right back. I got to get to Scully and Christofek, Hammer, Nick Tamaro. There's supposed to be a special guest, and we'll probably save him for the end of the show. All right? Actually, I got a crazy idea, but I'll have to save that. All right, we'll see. We'll see about the special surprise guest. At the races, our last morning at the Ocala Breeder Sales Company, the March sale in the books. And we'll see those horses probably as soon as Keeneland. Breaking here. Scully next. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Beck.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
we're back, and just coming for the second half. We're about 20 minutes in, and just in contact with Joe Christofek, who's going to join us after James Scully. And I was about to say, here's James, but we don't have James yet. So give me a second to bring James aboard, and we'll get his weekend action, and that'll include, I imagine, a couple of opinions at Turfway. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, pleasure to be back up with you. I was off last week, and back. We got 8 qualifiers over the next 3 weekends, 3 this Saturday. So all 20 starters in last year's Derby were in action over this 3-week period, and anticipate the same again this year. So this is the busy time, go time for the Kentucky Derby. Really excited for the couple stakes, obviously the Louisiana Derby's first and foremost.
Well, go ahead. Get going. Start where you want.
All right. I'll start right there in the main event at Fairgrounds. You know, to me, obviously, a lot have been made about the pace in there, and I'm not expecting a real hot pace. And whoever makes it, I think, is capable of perhaps, you know, maybe even catching if he's not getting chased too hard. And I look at Shopper's Revenge. This horse rallied from well back in 2 of his races for second when he missed the break. In his lone race, he broke well. He led wire to wire pretty impressively in his second outing, going a mile to 16th at Oaklawn. Others have mentioned on this show how Steve asked. Smithson has worked him from the gate. I saw his quotes leading up to the race. He's really pleased. He anticipates Shopper's Revenge to go from the rail. And that's the speed horse that I would want on my ticket. I'm looking at Shopper's Revenge having the best chance for an upset. And I think Instant Coffee is going to take another step forward off the LeCompte. I think those are the 2 horses that I will use in any pick 5 sequences. And I may look to, with a little bit of a bigger lean with Instant Coffee on top, place a vertical exotics with it pair.
Well, and some value from Shopper's Revenge, who comes in at 12-1.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, here's a colt. I mean, we've seen this before. Steve Asmussen has a horse in earlier in the card that I like, Shopper's Lux. You see his horse's first time out get overlooked at double-digit odds and turning it in an encouraging effort. They come right back in their next start. Epicenter was 6th at 13-1, went off like the favorite in his next start, easily broke his maiden. Shopper's Revenge was 12-1 first out, came back at 2 turns, easily broke his maiden at 2-1. And I even think that, you know, Asmussen has a horse in today, Shopper's Lux, that fits that definition really well in race 7. So, or Super Lux, sorry, Super Lux, the 2 horse. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about the, you know, I think that horse has a lot of upside. I think it's real bullish. A lot of people talking about him running disarm in this race, and I do respect his chances. But he's got to work out a trip to me from off the pace, and Shopper's Revenge has a little bit of a tactical advantage over him. Going just back one race of Fairgrounds Oaks, I wonder how much Hoosier Philly is going to be overlooked. It just seems like everybody's going to be spreading against her multi-race bets. And I don't see any reason to use her if you think she's beatable. And if you think she's going to probably bounce back and win that race, you might as well single her. I'm going to probably be in that latter camp. I know that in that race in the Rachel Alexandra, I went back and watched the replay again. I mean, she's just not striding out once she gets like to the far end of the far turn. I think she had spit the bit by that point, wasn't trying, and being drawn outside and, you know, better early scenario probably in this field, I think she got every chance to bounce back with a strong showing.
That's interesting that you're leaning in that way. All right, that means a little something to me.
Yeah, and then I'll go back over, you know, in the Mervin Munez, I look at that race as having some pace. I mean, I know Atone rallied off the pace to win the Pegasus World Cup turf, but you look at him, a lot of his wins have come wire to wire on the front end. I don't think Luis Saez is going to allow 2 Emmys to get out there and steal it. The 2 horses I'm going to use on my ticket are Another Mystery for Chris Block, that talked about how well his horses have run, and Spooky Channel for Jason Barkley. I thought Spooky Channel didn't get hit the right trip last time, being on a lead in a really slow pace, and that John Conley, he's going to sit back and have a better trip tomorrow, and I give him a shot in that Mervin Nunez Memorial Classic, number 5, Spooky Channel with Rosario.
Yeah, Spooky's worth a long look. I don't disagree at all.
And then going back to the New Orleans Classic, you know, Kameen, Art Collector, I mean, I give him credit for running that big race in the Pegasus World Cup, but I wonder what kind of trip he's going to work out from post two. And, you know, he just hasn't been the most consistent performer, and there's some real pace in this race. If Treasury doesn't scratch out, sometimes you see these long shots like that, and they can, like, just scratch the morning of the race and kill that projected pace scenario. But if Treasury's in there and West Will Power, second start back off of that Razorback, they're going to guarantee a good pace. I took a long look at number 5, Rattle and Roll, Steve. I can completely excuse his effort in the Indiana Derby where, you know, he got wiped out of the start. It's completely forgivable. And his last three races, a mile 16th or a mile and an eighth, he wins going away impressively, earns huge figures. I think he was a horse that was all messed up after he won the Breeders' Futurity at 2 over the winter and in the spring, but he finally started to put it together last fall, and he could show more at age 4 for McPeak. And the other one, I was running second in 3 straight starts, but I still think he's going to get a favorable setup. He likes the fairgrounds, and he's in good form for Calhoun, so I won't leave him off my tickets.
Rattle and Roll. Marcus has got him on the ticket.
Yeah. And then in the Tom Benson Memorial, I understand the love for Edidia, and I'll throw her on my 2-5 ticket, and I'll also use She Can't Sing on there. But I'm intrigued by number 3, Trail Ridge Road. This is a classic Chris Block other horse example where, to me, this filly is completely sneaky off of that third-place effort last out in her first stake at Fairgrounds, first open stake race. I thought that was a really solid third-place effort that she could continue to move forward off of, a 4-year-old point of entry filly for Team Block. Everybody knows how well his horses are running on the turf, and I think that filly has some upside, and at the very least is one to consider for the vertical exotics at 12-1 on the morning line.
Trail Ridge Road showed up the other day. Now that you mention, there was a horse that I was handicapping something else. Maybe it was last weekend, and I saw that. I'm trying to figure out who it is at a glance here, but somebody that had run in a race against Trail Ridge Road, and I scored some extra points, four, just because I knew, I knew that she's really done not much wrong. For Block.
Yeah, I mean, you can just see, he's just taking his time with her last fall and wraps up in her in October, brings her back on the dirt in December from a freshening, and now just gets her back on the grass, and she's just taking off. She's really coming into her own. His horses are better as older horses than they are as like 3-year-olds. So that's a filly with a lot of upside, and Rosario takes them out. I mentioned number 2, Super Lux, in race 7. That pretty much will wrap up the fairgrounds, Steve.
Excellent. All right. Got it.
Turning to Turfway Park, one thing I see with some of these races, Steve, is I see some of these races where there might be multiple horses that like to race on the front end if they make the lead, but they're more than comfortable sitting second or third. And I just want to caution everybody, last year on this Jeff Ruby Stakes Day, 6 of 11 races, including multiple stakes, were won wire to wire. Speed is always dangerous on these big days, even on Tapeta, and I like some speed horses on the card. I'll start off with just with the Jeff Ruby Stakes. I like 5 Fantastic Again. Or number 4 Fantastic Again. I think this, he's a horse that in 3 races he's made the lead. He's led wire to wire. And I thought his last 2 races at Turfway were just sensational. And I think, I thought that there was some speed in both of those spots, and he just makes the lead easily. And I think Maker's Candy and Bluebird's Over, if they were drawn inside of him and they broke on top, they would go. But they're going to sit second or third when Fantastic again makes the lead out of the gate with Corrales. I like him wire to wire for Wesley Ward. I think he's improving, and he'll have more to offer in that in the Jeff Ruby Stakes.
6-1 on Fantastic again.
Yeah, and then in the Bourbon and Oaks, it's a similar situation where I thought that the pace was really hot in the Cincinnati Trophy. You can just look at this field. None of the speed's back from that race. And that race set up great, I thought, for Botanical. I look at A.G. Bullitt and Miss New York and some of these others. They're not need the lead types by any stretch. I think number one, Renegade Rebel, is going to break running from the inside with Rafael Hernandez. I like their two Tepeda races, the way she concluded last year with stretching out to a two-turn distance or a route distance at Woodbine. And I think she's going to continue to move forward off of those performances as a three-year-old, or is eligible to, especially on synthetic. And I like her wire-to-wire in the Bourbonette Oaks from the rail.
I thought that once you acknowledged the two Brad Coxes, Botanical and Flashy Jam,
yeah,
that then the next two that you had to consider were the DJ Stable, Cassie Runner, Renegade Rebel, and then this Bolivie of Brendan Walsh that doesn't even show a North American workout. That's got to be, these were early PPs, but who knows what this horse is.
And I did want to mention Flashy Jam because I mentioned the pace earlier. Those two races had short fields with no paces at, or at least that race at Turfway last time. It was a five-horse field. She was out there going pretty easy. Even in a race before that, she went 25 and change and 49 and change. I don't think she has to be on the front end. And, I like the one from the rail.
She does get Johnny, and Johnny, Johnny goes forward as a matter of course. So I think she'll be forwardly placed to some degree. No matter what.
Yeah, and I'm hoping, though, she just settles second. But you're right, though. I mean, she is a concern out there. I will pick a late runner in the Kentucky Cup Classic. That race, I thought, did have, a legitimate pace.
Ton of speed.
And, even this King Cause, he led wire-to-wire in this race last year. He's going forward at the start. So I like number seven, ready to perform a little bit in there. I think that's a horse that could get on track late here in this spot. He did, his lone win did come on the front end at Saratoga, his lone stakes win last year, but he's more than comfortable rating off the pace, and I think he's gonna show more off of that season opener in that race in the Colonel Bradley at Fairgrounds, where he just got away slow and really didn't run much in that spot. He intrigues me coming here. Brad Cox and Fernando de la Cruz have been absolutely on fire this meet together, and he was like a off-the-pace runner that I'll at least look to mix in on some vertical exotics.
All right, and I will reiterate that should Verstappen get into this race, and I assume that this horse is named for the Formula One driver. I would guess this horse is dangerous. Should he get in?
And let me mention one other horse in the Rushaway Stakes, race number 8.
Yeah.
I like number 8, Reckoning Force, in there for Brendan Walsh with Adam Beskitza. I thought that Black Gold Stakes was a terrific field. I think that Wonderful Justice that's undefeated for Brad Cox is a graded turf stakes horse. I thought that My Red, White, and Blue is a horse with a lot of upside for Louis Roussel. And Reckoning Force, off the layoff, after running terrible in his last two stakes races, or not making any impact, he came back with a really strong effort that day, and I think he'll improve upon that. So he's a little intriguing to me in that Rushaway Stakes. If he can get some positional, if he can get some positioning in the early parts.
I'll give you one goofy horse in there that could do something. Maybe juice up your try, or I don't know. This Ocean Point, who looks outclassed, might just be getting better at the right time. It looks like a clever claim by Estevenko, and 30-1 on Ocean Point off that pair of wins, the maiden 30 and then a starter allowance win. The horse is going to look all obscure in here, but might be okay.
Yeah, I mean, just two cards, though. I mean, the one thing that we've always talked about in years past is when these derby preps come up with short fields, and just to see all these big fields and these derby preps, and then you look at the fairgrounds and Turfway, they have outstanding undercards with all these 10, 12-horse fields, so really good betting fair this Saturday. I've got a last-second push for you at Aqueduct. It's a little bit early today, 1:50 p.m., race number two. That's a race that has a couple Todd Pletcher horses dropping in class. I think they're both, you know, vulnerable. I like number six, Cloud Music, on the front end for Chapman and Gomez. It's his third start. He's 12-1 on the morning line. Number six, Cloud Music, in race two at Aqueduct today.
The LSFP, the last second Friday push. And there is, I should mention, there is, maybe Nick will mention it, there is the seven-horse field today in the Eastview Stakes. Tomorrow, they're running all those Claiming Crown style starters. Allowances, so they're running the New York bred $100,000 three-year-old filly sprint today, where Maple Leaf Mel for Maya Engelhart and Rosario will be
I remember her on the day before the Travers, after that rainstorm. She loved that slop the day before the Travers in Saratoga.
I love it. James, terrific, thank you, get lucky, and we'll talk next week from Gulfstream.
All right. Thank you, Steve. You have a great weekend.
James Scully, everybody. James_Scully, 111. Gets us to the, right? Yeah, to the top of the hour. Let's get Joe Christofek in here. And we got Nick to come and Hammer. And KK, I got to get Kevin Kirstein in to give his Bayou Bluegrass pick five play. All right? I sent KK a message. I said, do you have opinions for the Bayou Bluegrass? He said, I got opinions on everything. That was Kevin Kirstein's response. And here he is, Joey the K, Joe Christofek, getting ready to pack up the living quarters and get back home to Churchill and to the Ville. Joe, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And the season goes fast down there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's strange because in some ways it seems like it does, and in some ways it seems like it doesn't. It seems like it's been a long time since I've been back in Louisville, but at the same time, you know, you kind of have that balance of, you know, oh, it's time to go back. I'm ready to go back. And, I mean, you maximize your time when you come here, Steve. I love being here in the winter, so, you know, there's always that bittersweet feeling when any meet ends, but this will be different because it's a big change up going back and, you know, gearing up for Kentucky Derby next.
Exactly right, and there'll be a bunch of horses that make the Derby and the Oaks out of the proceedings tomorrow. Let's dive in, Joe, and get some, last big day opinions from you. Start with the Derby, and let's work backwards.
I mean, I'm sure it's the popular opinion because it's just blatantly obvious, but, you know, the two things stand out about this race, well, actually three, the two things that stand out first that are non-horse related are the distance and the lack of the pace. I mean, they're horse related, but I mean, as far as the contenders and the horses that are actually participating, the distance is 1 3/16, so it's a test of stamina. But then you look at the race, and there's just not a lot of speed. So to me, when I look at a race like this, I'm trying to figure out who can get the distance. But then at the same time, when the pace is expected to be slow, you got to take that into major consideration as well. And then you've got a 2-1 favorite that likes to come from out the back. So it makes it an even trickier, I would say, handicapping puzzle. You know, in the Risen Star, Steve, I thought that was a great race to break down because there was quite a bit of speed in there. And then for me, at least, I had a pretty good idea, at least in my mind, the horse that I thought would get the mile and an eighth. And it turned out well with the eventual winner, Angel of Empire. This race is just muddled in a lot of ways. So I decided to settle on picking a horse that's going to make the first move. I know that Steve Asmus has been high on Disarm from the beginning. The race at Oaklawn was deceivingly better than it looks. And I just think he's going to take a big step forward, and he's going to get the right trip.
It's funny how certain horses in a big field that, you know, people kind of suddenly congregate and disarm his horse. I think I brought up as early as Tuesday or Wednesday as, you know, being sort of an interesting outsider or you know, interloper into this, and suddenly he's a buzz horse. So between him and Cagliostro, it'll be interesting to see how the final odds shake out. It's a very fun Louisiana Derby. Joe, what about the girls and you know, the Hoosier Philly story? I've got to mention, who was it? Was it Schaap that said, you know, she needs points at this point to get to the Oaks, let alone, you know, some of the craziness that was going on earlier in the winter?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of points on the line. So even if you run fifth, you get 10. If you run fourth, you get 20. So she's got some points banked. I think the bigger question for Hoosier Philly, Tom Amos and her legion of fans, is she any good? I mean, we thought she was a potential superstar as a two-year-old, and then, you know, kind of a little bit flat in the Rachel Alexandra, but with an obvious excuse of stumbling at the start. She was behind a wall of horses on the first turn. She had kind of an uncomfortable trip, and she was seven wide on the second turn, and just didn't finish with a whole heck of a lot of punch. But you can kind of, in a way, understand why. They went 25 flat and 48 and 4, 113. And I think the outside post does her a lot of good. I think she's a free-running horse who is going to very much appreciate being in the clear. I don't see any way she gets, you know, in trouble or covered up with the post, particularly the way she ran last time. So as a fan of this horse from the beginning, Steve, I'm rooting for her to, you know, develop into the horse we thought she could be. But right now, she just needs to take a step forward, and I think that would be, you know, what Tom Amos would want to see moving into the first Friday in May, potentially. She was the hype horse on.
Did we lose? I think we lost Joe. I think we did. Let me let's get Joe back. Sorry about that, and. All right. We were rolling. We were rolling until that hiccup. There we go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was just so much anticipation for her last race. And now I think we're all kind of like, well, what's she going to do? You know, so I'm rooting for her. I want to see her. You know, somebody in this division needs to step up. And maybe it'll be somebody in this race, or maybe consistency, you know, the consistency that Pretty Mischievous has shown, and even the Alice look, maybe that's what's going to take. It's going to take to win this race this year. Maybe it won't be that kind of spectacular winner that we're used to seeing.
All right, so Hoosier Philly back with you, and let's press forward or backward. The Munis.
I mean, I look at this race so many times in so many different ways, and looking at trying to beat a tone. But the bottom line in this race, Steve, is the way the turf course has been this meet. You know, all the stakes races we've had have probably been a notch below what they could have been if we had, you know, a normal turf season and we were able to move the rails around, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, even outside of his Pegasus World Cup win last out, which was a grade one, you just look at his past performances, and even though he's not winning a lot of these races, he's hitting the board in grade ones, grade twos, grade threes. You look at the rest of the field outside of, you know, the defending champion, two Emmys, who's a Fairgrounds lover, and we all know how good he is, and he was dominant in the Fairgrounds, the grade three last time here locally. You look at the rest, listed stakes, borderline graded stakes horses, maybe Spooky Channel, a legitimate graded stakes horse, but I really think he's better at mile and a quarter, mile and a half. So as much as I wanted to try to beat a tone, at least for top pick purposes, I did land on him.
All right. I get it. That's a reasonable, it's a reasonable angle. What about the Classic, which, of course, starts this Bayou Bluegrass Pick 5?
I mean, again, always trying to beat the favorites, and I got some bombs picked during the course of the 15-race program, but you just look at the way this race is going to play out. Treasury's going to go to the lead. There's no question about that. Wes Willpower is going to be in the chasing queue, and then Art Collector showed a completely different dimension in the Pegasus World Cup, sitting from off the pace. He was dominant. He was much the best. If he shows that same kind of style on Saturday, I mean, I know people are somewhat skeptical that, you know, that race was really for real, but it sure looked for real to me. And if he runs that same kind of race, he's going to be super tough to beat. He's 8-5 in the morning line. Again, when you look at his class compared to the class of some of the other ones, you know, Wes Willpower was second in the grade one Clark, but that wasn't the strongest version of the Clark that you're ever going to see. And then you look at some of the other ones, Rattle and Roll, first start as a four-year-old. And then the local horses, Happy American, Mr. Wireless, Pioneer Medina. They're all good, but they're grade three horses. Our collector's a grade one horse and a legitimate grade one horse. I'm going right back to him.
Sometimes, especially on big days, you do well to just kind of give in to the obvious and not get overly clever. How about the start of the pick five? The Benson came up very good, and especially if you have an alternate opinion versus adventuring, this is a fun field.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways you can go in this race. I think a horse that I kind of like at a price who I actually settle on picking second is New Boss, who's been a sprinter her entire career, but she gets a chance to stretch out. And what makes these races a little bit more puzzling is that rail coming in another 7 feet. I don't know if that's going to advantage horses that have the inside trips, horses that have speed, like adventuring, potentially like New Boss. We just don't really know, so that kind of throws a little bit of a wrench into the whole handicapping process. But I talked to Ignacio Correas on the phone the other day, and he thinks Diddy has got a chance to be, you know, a grade one caliber animal. She did nothing wrong after coming over from Argentina. She was 2-for-2 at Colonial. And while she was winning those races, Steve, they were teaching her how to rate from off the pace, and, you know, she learned her lessons well. She's coming back fresh. This probably isn't, you know, the obvious goal for the spring, summer, and the rest of the year. You know, this is her comeback race. But she did win fresh when she came over from Argentina from December to July at Colonial, and that gave me added confidence that she can win off the bench. Ignacio says she's ready. Whether or not she's going to be as good this day as she is maybe down the road remains to be seen, but I think she might be good enough to beat this field on this day.
There it is. That's the stakes portion, the major stakes portion. Of course, there is the Louisiana bred stuff early on the card. And Joe, any other interesting horse that you know you're betting in the first half of the card?
Super Lux Race 7 for Steve was fourth. Yeah, is that it? Is that the horse everybody's getting?
He seems to be a popular.
We'll move on. Long shot, Steve. I'm going to go to race six. I'm going to tell you about number six, Sweet Child of Mine, for Joe Sharp, who there was buzz on going into the debut, and the horse got hung four wide the entire trip from post 11, made a big move on the turn to threaten, and then kind of flattened out. And I think in this race, with a better post position and a 15-1 morning line off of the debut that doesn't look that good, this horse is going to get completely overlooked. I'm picking the horse on top. I'm going to try to swing for the fences. But if you're looking at multi-race wagers, or you're at least looking at exactas, tries, supers, don't leave that horse out.
Very cool. It's a fun race. I thought the other Asmussen, the one that's a half to Nashville, Major Somme, deserved some attention at 8-1. There's, you know, the horse of Margolis's. What was wrong with that debut? Sandra D. She's 10-1 with James Graham. There's a lot going on, and it's obviously a gigantic day of racing as they get ready to close out the season at the Fairgrounds. Saturday and Sunday, three more stakes actually on Sunday, and there's a training title to be settled and all of this good action. Joe, tremendous job you and Kevin Kilroy and all the guests that you paraded through, and it should be a great day tomorrow and a great weekend. Thanks so much.
Yeah, let's crush it tomorrow. This is the kind of card, if you really map out, you know, your selections and try to take advantage of the horses that you like the best, come up with some singles, come up with some prices, this is the kind of card you can crush.
Joe Christofek, everybody. Joey Decay. Joe, we will see you in the Ville in a couple of weeks. There we go. There's Joe. Let me swing right around. We got 45 minutes and a ton to get done. All right. Let's see about Nick Tamaro. And I just heard from Mike Welch, who we may table Mike just because there's a little bit too much, and will be obviously at Gulfstream all next week. But he said that he had a little bit of an update, and that includes two updates, actually. And if we don't, Michael, flesh it out in person if we talk. But Tim Yakteen says that Fort Bragg, who had been entered in the Sunland Derby, he's going to now bypass, and he's going to come to Florida and contest the Florida Derby with Joel Rosario. And Mike is going to have a further details. He also said that a couple of minutes ago, Mage, the Gustavo Delgado, the maiden breaker that we saw smashingly graduate on Holy Bull Day, Mage is a yes now, it looks like, for the Florida Derby with Luis Saez aboard. And certainly style-wise, he fits nicely. All right, so there's a couple of Florida Derby tidbits for those that are following along that way. Let's see if we can't get Nick in here. We got Hammer and Kevin Kirstein yet as well. So a lot to try to get done. And Nick has had about as busy a week. That included writing press releases for Sam Houston. That was part of his activity, and included advances on the state card on Sunday, and of course the new racing secretary Mike Acton. That was named. All right, didn't reach first try, so let's get Hammer in here instead. And not a ton to do with Hammer, but he might have a couple of opinions, and he'll update us on everything going on at Santa Anita 2 while we have a window. So, not going to miss the opportunity to get an update. And of course the weather scenario for California has just been relentless. Hammer, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
Relentless is a good one. I was trying to cue up Creed's Clearwater, Who Will Stop the Rain, but it has stopped. So that's a good thing.
Well, no racing today, but basically shifting everything Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, that's the second week in a second. Is it? Yeah, the second week in a row, I believe, from Friday to Monday. It's been, this is my first winter back here in a while, and grew up here. Rain, and it rains in the winter time, and don't kid yourself. It's not like it doesn't rain, but the timing of the rains, 2 days off. 3 days on, 2 days off, 3 days on, consistently since January, and it's just created havoc here with thing and the conservative nature of how they handle the off tracks, which when it's over it'll be, but it just really creates havoc with training. And now when you get into racing and moving racing dates, it's really stunted the momentum. And with opening day, and it's actually been okay when they've been able to open for the weekend. But I think we're knocking on wood here now that after this, it'll go. And there's a break coming up. They scheduled a break after Santa Anita Derby weekend, be the 8th and 9th. So the 10th. A break, which they won't come back until the next Friday, so it'll be like 10, 11 days off, and I think that'll be more of a collection. Everyone will sit down and just kind of gather and have some real racing for the last couple of months, but yeah, you were here, you experienced it, so yep. It's been more the same.
Well, when the racing resumes tomorrow, let me reach for the action. There we go. You do have 2 days worth of coast to coast pick five action, and I'll give everybody that info again. Gulfstream 8th, 9th, 10th, Santa Anita 3rd, 4th, that's Saturday, and then Sunday, Gulfstream 8, 9, 10 again with the Santa Anita 3rd and the 5th. And the stake later in the card, the five-horse field in the Desert Stormer. Any thoughts on this card?
It's weird. What it's created havoc-wise as far as, some of these fields are a little smaller this weekend, and that's just only because, the uncontinuity of training, being able to, get that last work in has really stopped it. So I think, like I said, once we stop, the fields will get back to where they actually were doing pretty good before that. But, a five-horse field, a Desert Stormer, three-quarter race for fillies and mares. I always got to comment because, a lot of these fillies and mare sprints and even long races, the ones are, they're short. And you always hear the owners, we won't black type. Just put these races up. Well, everybody will enter. And they never do. Fives and sixes are the norm. It's a good little bunch in here. I kind of looked to Mark Glad's horse, Dance of the Music, who was able to run second in this race last year. Had a few starts. Come back or down the hill, probably not turf, maybe not be his bag, her bag, but I think she'll look pretty good in here. Dance to Music, Elm Drive, coming from Phil D'Amato off a long layoff from September, actually ran in good, got beat 47 lengths, but a little in overhead, but prepped out here, and Elm Drive will probably go off the chalk, but looking for a little data. Which we all like to do when we can. But then Sunday carries on, and Sunday is Angel Flight. We have the Angel, which is 3-year-old filly race coming down the hill, and it's nice to we'll have that hill aired out, and we'll be coming down the hill on Sunday, which is a good thing, and we'll get back to some down the hill. I looked at Broadway Girls. Kind of the kind of horse we look at for Steve, coming. Oh, there's some here. There's Manhattan Jungle, who's won the Sweet Life coming down the hill. There's the Ragtime Rose, who ran second there. But Broadway Girls coming off the mile and be going long. It's kind of a little tip off here at some of these horses that trying the hill for the first time. And I think Broadway Girls for Doug O'Neill has been winning races all over the place. With Rispoli on, we'll have a good shot there. But listening to the show all morning, and it's the spotlight's on Louisiana, obviously, and Turfway Park, and it's kind of neat how they kind of shift. This weekend is here. Next weekend will be Florida Derby, Arkansas Derby, and then the next weekend is, I think it's the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby. So we get to see a lot of stuff weekend after weekend, and the racing is just starting to pick up, and you're just starting to feel it. And everyone said, it's good to see these big fields, and it's good to see these tracks step up when it's quote their turn.
Very much. And we're gonna be together next week, Thursday, Friday, for Gulfstream.
Yeah, heading to. I wanted to get out to the Florida Derby. I hadn't been to Gulfstream for many moons, especially the new Gulfstream. And I'm taking the red eye on Wednesday, land and shoot on over, and we'll bring the band back together. We'll try to get John Ferrata there, and we'll take a trip back to yesteryear and do that. But looking forward to get to Florida, and I'm sure that'll be a big card. And, man, to tell you the truth, I'm kind of anxious to check out the facility and head up the road to Palm Meadows and check out that. But I want to see Forte again, and he's the horse that we're all looking at, right? Everyone's chasing him, trying to he's right now, I've seen, you have to say, definitely be the favorite, and kind of looking forward to seeing him.
We'll also we'll have a little bit of that conversation. You were listening in to us about the turf topic that came up this week while I've been here at Ocala, and maybe get Mike Lakeow to join us too, and get some let you guys kind of have a little bit of a round table.
Yeah, we heard when you were you're still at the sale, but earlier in the week you had John Sakura on, who's just, you know, he's great to talk to and listen to, because he's, you know, he's an out of the box guy and he's got ideas but he was talking about the seeming change from, you know, predominantly dirt racing to switching over to turf. You know, where that comes from and why that is. And, you know, I texted you during the show saying, hey, this is a great topic. And then afterwards said, you know what, this is a better discussion type topic. And yeah, we'll get you and myself and maybe Mike Lakeow, maybe John as well, Parada, about, you know, how and why that shift has moved over from predominantly dirt racing to just a lot more turf racing in the past decade or so. So yeah, that'd be great. Just, you know, a couple other things to talk about. You know, there was the wagering's down a little bit this year, and I thought that might be another discussion. You know, possibly why that's going on. But you know, individually, there's been some really good cars and good racing going on. It's I'm really pumped up. I gotta. You know, I was looking at Turfway, Tyler Pickelsheimer, who does the Turfway. He sent me the overnight again. It reminded me of, you know, we used to walk around Seattle. You see these people with the 12 jerseys on for, you know, 12th man. You know, I said, I got to get you a jersey for 12. I think between Tito's Turf Downs, between Kentucky Downs and Turfway Park, there's no two places that have more 12 horse fields. I'm telling you. I said, what, do you take entries from a hammock? I mean, it's unbelievable. So congratulations to them. They've just really stepped it up to the Turfway meet. Has been amazing this year. And this is, you know, just kind of an exclamation mark in that meet.
It is remarkable. I mean, it's been for those that have to, I mean, you have to acknowledge that the synthetic is going to be part of the equation, you know, but for those that say, oh, I can't bet XYZ track because of the fields, well, here's 12 horse fields in every race, every single night. It's nuts.
It is nuts. And, you know, I've taken with it a little bit, you know, if I'm playing and in the evening here, it's quite as nighttime as it is. And I started you know, digging deep and spending time, I found that when it comes time to Turfway, the less you look at it, the better it is. Because you think too much when you start looking at this. With, okay, will this horse like it? Will he won't like it? Oh, he's raced on the turf. The guy just too many variables. I just, you know, go ahead and boom, boom, boom. And I seem to, it's like a not wasted time, but I seem to just zero in on and have a little bit better time than, you know, most tracks you like to spend a little time with. But there's too many variables here. How many, like, look at the classic here. The favorites are the ones that are coming off the turf, right? Santine, and he's 3-1, and Mike Maker's horse, King Cause, is 7-2. They haven't even, Santine hasn't even run on the stuff. So I thought, looking at the thing, oh man, maybe we'll get a price on there, and it ends up being the favorite in there. But some really good feels. And then you go over to and you know what? Good, you know, they've struggled the turf restriction there. But what an ending for them! Is this closing day?
Good. You know what? That's a great question. I'm going to say no, because Keeneland doesn't start until. No, there's got to be more, because...
Is there more?
There has
just
to
curious.
Be. There has to be, because Keeneland doesn't start until late, the 7th. They're seemingly almost a week late, the way the calendar lies. So there's got to be...
Okay.
Yeah, there's got to be more.
I was just curious. It's a good way to go out, saying, here, thank you very much, and out the door I went. But good card there. Now you're because you're not going to come out here next week. You're going
right.
to be you're going to Kentucky, correct?
I am going to Kentucky. I've got a function that I was invited
to. You're getting another deserved award on Wednesday. You've mentioned, and that's good. And I'll actually be in Keeneland myself for a couple meetings on Monday and Tuesday. So
that's
we might cross paths again, but. But hearing everybody talk about the Louisiana Derby this morning, usually I like to turn it off so I don't hear everybody. But it's just so many interest. Listen to Scully and Chap and everybody go over it. Some takes, but I forget who said like instant coffee. I don't know. Is any a standout in here?
That point has been made. There's no doubt.
Yeah. You know, and I just watched a couple of Brad backing off, taking his time, boom, this is the spot, and then looking for a couple of horses off the bottom. I come up with, interestingly enough, another Brad Cox, that Tappet's Request. His race in the Risen Star was sneakily good. Made a nice little run up there, probably wasted a little bit of energy, was super, super wide, you know, lost a lot of ground. I see Franco gets back on. I didn't realize, but he was on him for the initial race in Saratoga when his first time out, when he ran second. So knows the horse a little bit, so I'm looking for him. I noticed that Drew probably had his pick, and he ended up staying on Jace's Road, who, you know what, throw out those two sloppy races for him and the Southwest and the Street Sense, and guess what? So bad either. So
no.
I ended up with a Cox trifecta when I got done here with the 9-11-8. But that's the way I saw that race. But a great sequence for the pick five there. I think it's great that Classic came out really, I mean, super. One of the better older horse races we've had all year. You know, can Arc Galactor, he seems to run him good in bunches. When he gets good, he gets really good. But he is definitely beatable. And I think Pioneer Medina might slip in there for a little bit. I like the way that Todd shipped him over for the prep and took him back home and got him ready, and he's sitting on go for a little bit of a run there, so we like him a little bit. And Phrase is great. Chris Block's horses have been running well. Another Mystery looks good in there. Just a great Saturday of racing. And CAA stuff with the, you know, those games are starting to heat up, so we're coming out of the fog here a little bit and heading into some good stuff.
Speaking of the NCAAs, Rich Yang last night, 2-for-2 with Florida Atlantic. That was a tremendous play, and then laying the points in a blowout for UConn over the Razorbacks. So 2-for-2 for Rich. So now he's. Let's see, he went 2-1 last week, so now he's 4-1. Going into today, he's taking Princeton and the number. Hammer, I appreciate it, and good luck this weekend. I will see you Thursday.
See you in the Sunshine State. Safe travels and study at the races.
Well, there we go. There's Hammer, and literally away they go. If you're not following him, you should be. I promised. We got both Kevin and Nick tied up on business calls, so we'll see if either one's gets clear. So we're going to try to get a quick little visit in with Welsh and get the update for the Florida Derby, but I did promise you a potential surprise guest. I'm trying this as well. This is not easy. Let me give it one more shot, and we will All right, so we'll give that a minute, and I'll save the surprise for the end of the show. let's reach for Mike and get Welsh in here and get the latest news, because they had to be worried a little bit in the racing office at Gulfstream about the Florida Derby field, and now suddenly there's some invaders at least one invader, and that'll be Yakteen with a horse that I kind of liked in the San Felipe, Fort Bragg. Mike Welch, breaking news this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, Mike, give everybody I would say positive developments regarding the Derby field.
Yeah, it certainly is a new and interesting twist. I wouldn't be surprised to see Fort Bragg go off second choice. He did get a 91 buyer in his last start. Didn't get the best of trips. I had a little chat with Tim Yakteen a few minutes ago, and they had hoped, I think, for him to be a little bit more forwardly placed, and he wasn't. And he said actually one of the two factors why they decided to make the change and come here was that there was a little more pace in that race than they liked, and which obviously leads you to believe that they're going to try to, send him out of here. Out early here and try to be up close from the outset. So, and of course, the other factor being the qualifying points. For him to qualify for the Derby, and he's only got 5 points right now, he'd pretty much have to win the Sunland race. And I think he was third choice on the morning line there. He only has to run second, maybe even third, with 40 and 30 points to those two spots here to get in the Derby field in a race where he may be second choice. So just my guess. I'm just thinking the fact that it's Baffert / Yakteen and the connections all around for that horse, and with the 91 buyer coming off a layoff, and race you think he can improve off of, I'm gonna guess he might be second choice over probably Mage. I guess Mage might be the other one that's gonna draw some attention off his pretty good effort in the Florida Derby, and the fact that this will, be only his third start, and another horse that figures to improve off his last.
Run down how this thing shapes up right now, at least. And they're drawing when? Are they drawing
tomorrow?
They are drawing tomorrow. Yeah.
I mean, you got to love this 7-day out stuff. I mean, it makes things easier on everybody, especially the public handicappers, the Clocker Report writers, and the fans who want to get an early jump. I'm not sure how many races they're running next Friday, next Saturday. I'm guessing it'll be at least 14, and that's probably the number. I'm not sure they'll go higher than that. But, it's great to have the whole card done tomorrow. Right now, they're looking at 8 or 9.
Okay.
Well, Mischief is definite, coming off third-place finish. I thought a pretty good effort against the buyers. I thought he was on the dead rail in the Fountain of Youth. Il Miracolo was a distant fifth in the Fountain of Youth. The Santo Bond doesn't miss too many of these dances if they've got one going there. So he's going to go in. Let me see.
Safi? What's Safi Joseph?
Safi right now looks like only one for him, West Coast Cowboy. He did tell me that he nominated 7, and he did tell me there was a couple others he might consider depending on how they work. One of them is up at Palmetto's. He was up there today. He worked a lot of horses there today, so I think it's Mr. Ripple he was considering. So I'm going to guess we'll get one from him. Hold on a second. I've got a list here. If you give me 1 second of the others that they're looking at.
We had talked
as possible right now.
We had talked about the
besides the ones I mentioned, and obviously Forte Duvenel is going for sure, as I reported earlier in the week. Same reason for Danny Gargan, trying to get Derby qualifying points. Second or third should get him in, or second should for sure. He's already got 10. Third might too. Also, Jung Frau, the racing office, is saying for Bill Mott, he came out of a pretty rough run, actually eased in the withers at his only start. I'm a little surprised to see his name on their list. I haven't talked to Bill yet. Obviously, Rocket Can being rerouted to the Arkansas Derby. And then also Jack Diesel, who will be decided outsider.
Okay.
And is also being listed now as coming. He's training over Tampa at the moment.
Well, then, yeah, that'll be about eight. So, all right, so we'll get at least a reasonable gateful, but Fort will be an
overwhelming 1-5, yeah. Something like
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
It's not the most attractive betting race, obviously, with him in the lineup being such a heavy favorite. But at least now with fresh face coming in and one to respect with Fort Bragg and Maj, the connection just did confirm him about 20 minutes ago that he's now going to go in the Florida Derby. They were looking at the Bluegrass or maybe even the thought of skipping the Kentucky Derby and going Lexington / Preakness. But he worked well again this morning, a nice, easy 6 furlongs, actually went out a whole mile. And they like what they've seen from him, and I don't blame him. I mean, again, for them, too, it's a pretty good spot. You pick up second or third money, and, you could go to the Derby if that's what they want to do. You know, their case is a little different. Very lightly raced horse, got a late start. You know, it may be more prudent to pass the Derby and you know, wait for something like the Preakness. But if he were to run well in here, finish second behind Forte, say, it would be hard. It'd be very tempting not to go to Kentucky with him.
Exactly right.
And there's a rider change on him as well. Joel Rosario is going to ride Fort Bragg, and Luis Saez will ride Mage. Yep.
He'll suit him. Nothing wrong with either arrangement.
No, I mean, it would be interesting if Mage ran well. It would give Louis another option. He's already got two others, and but with Tappet Trice out there is one of them, because that all depends on how he runs in the Bluegrass. And he worked this morning, too, just what sounded like from talking to or texting with Dave Norton. It was a very easy half, pretty much like Mage did today. Easy half, good gallop out. He's probably going to have his most serious work next week up there at Palm Beach Downs.
Mike Welch, before we let you go, we obviously will be together next week broadcasting from Gulfstream, but give us an opinion in that Melody of Colors, full field of 12 as the co-feature tomorrow. Three-year-old fillies, turf sprinting.
Let me take a look. You caught me off guard a little bit.
Sorry.
Here. It is an interesting race. Hold on a second. I thought there were a lot of, question marks and a lot of options. Obviously, a full field going 5/8 on the grass already makes it a race where you got to get a little bit lucky. Sassy Nature is probably going to be the favorite, coming off that nice allowance win here in her turf debut. She's fast, and being fast is a good thing in these 5 furlong grass races. Get out there and try to avoid the traffic. Switching from Joel Rosario to Julian Laperrue, one thing about Julian, he makes the lead. He's tough to get past, so we'll see if Sassy Nature does that. Bedtime Story, an interesting horse, 3-for-3, all on a Tapeta against lesser company, but her last race was visually very impressive. She had a horrible trip, and she was able to overcome it and win. The big question mark is switching or transferring her Tapeta form over to the main track. Another interesting horse is Flor de Sombra. 4-for-5 against Pennsylvania Breds to start her career on most of the races on dirt. One of those was on Tapeta. She's going to come to the grass for the first time, too, and she's been working very well, so she's had a couple of really quick works. So a question mark there, too, as far as her ability to handle the grass. And George Delgado has put a couple of Euro invaders that he's brought over to make their U.S. debuts. I'm going to guess only one of the two are going to start. Miami Girl and Primrose Ridge has Chantel named on both. Question marks there. They both work well over the dirt here, but I'm not sure, quality-wise, where they fit with the local horses coming off that European form.
Outstanding, Mike. I appreciate it. 8-1 on Bedtime Story, D'Angelo and Castellano, the three to key off of in the Melody of Colors, which is part of the Coast to Coast. Mike, I will see you this week. I'm looking forward to Florida Derby week on hand.
Absolutely. Always look forward to it. See you here. Go Colgate, right? Red Raiders today?
We're rooting for a BU Colgate Frozen Four matchup at down the. I think the Terriers and Raiders can only hook up in the championship.
Well, that'd be great. That'd be great. There's definitely going to be a dinner on the line there.
Well, in the meantime, BU, very, very impressive against Western Michigan yesterday. I texted Mike. I said, you watching your Terriers? And he was. He absolutely was. Mike.
One eye on the Terriers and one eye on the eighth race at Gulfstream Park.
Exactly right. I appreciate it. Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch and the action from Gulfstream. It does not look like KK is going to be able to shake loose. He's on a business group call, and Nick is still Nick is still stuck in a meeting. So we are going to bring you. I wasn't sure if I was going to do it here or if we were going to do it next time I go to New Orleans in April. But the opportunity to say hello and to bring Frank Brightson to the show here. Just 24 hours away from the Louisiana Derby. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm terrific, and I you know that I've already gushed. I've already told everybody repeatedly how fabulous my maiden breaker was at the restaurant. But I'll say it again for your benefit. There aren't too many great restaurants in America or anywhere where you go for your first time, you've heard so much about it, and yet the meal exceeds expectation, but that was the case, just exceptional.
Thank you. I appreciate your kindness. It was really nice to meet you in person.
Well, this is this has got to be these kinds of days at fairgrounds. You'd love to come to the races. You're a wild-eyed horse player and fan. You know, talk about your association with the game.
Oh, I really do. I got into it probably 25 years ago, kind of by chance, and took my wife to Keeneland for the first time for our anniversary, and I've been in love ever since. And I go to the fairgrounds on Sundays, my day off, and this weekend, Derby weekend, is my absolute favorite day of the year. I have three buddies that come down from New York. I visit them at Saratoga. And we always have fun. Win or lose, we have fun.
That's one of the things. You mentioned that, and as I travel around, I run into people that I see. You know, they come to Saratoga. Maybe they're New Orleans types. Maybe they're from Hot Springs. But it's one of the real pleasures of the game is the conviviality, the sociability, and let's be honest, race trackers and horse players, we all love to eat. And being able to come to your place or for you to travel and meet and eat elsewhere around the country, Saratoga, Lexington, wherever. What are some of your favorites, actually? That's a great question.
Where, in Saratoga?
Or anywhere when you go to the races elsewhere.
Oh, well, Keeneland is number one for me. Saratoga is number two. That's always my New Year's resolution. Honey, can we go to Keeneland? Can we go to Saratoga? My friend Mike has a home, a beautiful home, just across the Northway from Saratoga, so I stay with him and we'll grill out or something like that. I do love the camaraderie. Mike and I are currently scheming up our pick fives for tomorrow. We're going to go partners on some bigger tickets. And it should be a great day. It's beautiful today, cloudy, but beautiful. And tomorrow is going to be sunshine and beautiful. So my thing is turf racing, Steve. That's what I love. And we haven't had too much this year at fairgrounds because of the course conditions. But my favorite race actually is the Costa Rising, which is a state bred turf sprint.
Sure.
For some reason, I seem to cash on that one every year, so I got my fingers crossed for tomorrow too.
Well, do you have a play, Frank? Because we've talked about it this morning, Chad Schexnader, it's a confusing group.
It is, and I'm going to stick with my winner from last year, Yankee 7, with Aubrey Green up. Aubrey Green has been riding lights out this year. And last year she chased Ron Fauché's Birdie Galaxy all the way to the finish line and then got him at the end. And I had a $2 super pay, 13 grand.
Oh, jeez.
So you know I'm going back in for that. And I think Mark Cassie's horse has to be used, of course. But the sleeper to me is the 8, one of Alvin Landry's horses. Can't think of the name off the top of my head, but the 8 horse, probably first time on turf. But Alvin Landry's a great horseman, and that horse looks live to me. So those are the 3 I'll use.
Very good. Cassie's the 9 with the favorite, Brown and Brow, that we talked about. And then Alan's got Vodka Gimlet or Brian's Iron Mike.
Brian's Iron Mike, that's the one I like.
There you go. So it looks like 179 for Frank Wrightson in the Costa Rising. When you talk about horsemen, everybody eats at the restaurant, Frank. Nobody more often, I'm guessing, than Pessin. Given that he's got his name on a nameplate in the corner, it's going to be hard not to root for him in the Derby, no?
Oh, definitely rooting for him. Neil's my best friend. We've known each other 25 years, and he is absolutely my best friend, and he is also the biggest gourmand in New Orleans. He loves to eat. Last night he brought in a group from TVG, Gabby, Scott Hazelton, and so it's always fun. And Baseline Beater to me, aside from my friendship, here's what I like about the horse. I know the buyers of the numbers don't look that great compared to some of the others, but when I see the word surged in the comment line in a route race, that always intrigues me. And if you look at the replay, the horse was just full of it. And Neil's comment to me was, or I overheard him tell a couple of people, is he will relish the distance. So even though it's kind of a paceless race, Baseline Beater hopefully will run his race and be there at the finish because it's extra distance. I'm on 3/8. So I think that's going to help him a lot.
If he wouldn't hurt for him to break a little bit better. Frank Wrightson is with us. Of course, one of the top restaurateurs in New Orleans. Frank, a couple of minutes about your career and your life, in the kitchen. Talk about the decision to go to basically become a chef, then the work you did with Chef Paul, with K-Pow.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I kind of stumbled into the restaurant business in my college years. I started working in a sandwich shop to make money for school, and then a little pasta place, and then I managed the pasta place. And when I moved back home, I went to LSU. When I moved back home to New Orleans, I decided I liked this career, and I wanted to make a profession of it. So I worked at a little place for a couple of years, and then I left there. And then one day, I picked up, you may remember this, there used to be this roll of paper that would arrive on your lawn every morning. It's called a newspaper. And I picked up the classified ads, and there was an ad for Commander's Palace, the top restaurant in New Orleans, hiring Creole chefs or people willing to learn Creole cuisine. I said, that's me. And Chef Paul Perdomo is the executive chef at the time. After 3 long interviews, he gave me a shot. And I got to learn every station in the kitchen in the course of 6 months. I learned how to saute, and he invited me to come over to K. Paul's Louisiana Kitchen, which he and his wife, Kay, had opened as a little lunch place, and they wanted to open for dinner. And so I said what I always said, yes, chef. So, he gave me a chance. And I worked 7 years with Paul, and in the crazy, wild, beautiful 80s, when American regional cuisine became a thing and was the talk of the country and the world. And we had a lot of great adventures together. And after 7 years, he and Kay sat me down and said, Frank, we think you're ready to go out on your own. And again, I said, yes, chef. And so Paul and Kay lent us the money and the support to open Brightson's restaurant 37 years ago. And my wife and I, the owners, her 2 sisters work with us. They worked at Kay Paul's. So it's a family-run restaurant in a small cottage in uptown New Orleans, and we are the happiest people on earth.
And it's reflected in the whole atmosphere, the way the whole room crackles. It's got a conviviality that is organic, and it comes from, you know, frankly, it starts with you and your wife, obviously, and the food, but then your whole staff, and then basically everybody that's there. You don't operate the way Rao's does in Harlem. But it's similar. It almost feels like everybody every night is a regular, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. And thank you for that. That's just what we want to hear. We hear the comment quite a lot that it's like eating in someone's home. That, you know, it's not just food. It's not just wine. It's not just service. It's hospitality and making people feel welcome. It's professional service, but it's very friendly. If you want to have fun, we'll have fun. And so we like to give people 2 hours of joy in their lives to forget about everything else in the world and just celebrate what's good in life with family and friends.
Well, it's done expertly, and if you can get a reservation, it's a must to get to Brightson's. It took me way too long, but actually a return trip is in the offing because Tina is making me bring her for Easter week. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks, actually, as it happens, Frank.
Oh, that's wonderful. Easter week, we make crawfish bisque. So we'll be ready for you.
Well, she'll be in for a treat, and everything. I sent her all the pictures, and they sent her the menu, and she cannot wait to get to town. And Frank, I'm delighted. I said I wanted to get this in before the Louisiana Derby, and best of luck with your tickets tomorrow, and thanks for this.
Oh, thank you. If you have a second, I just want to mention two more horses in the Derby that I like. Obviously, Instant Coffee is a deserving favorite, and Neil's horse I'm definitely using. But two of them I find interesting are Kenny McTeague's Sun Thunder, who I loved and used in the Risen Star, 16-1. And his horses tend to evolve. They don't jump up at you all the time, but this horse will run its race, and I think will be there. And then the other intriguing one to me is the other Brad Cox, Jace's Road, who's going to get the dry track that he loves and looks to be the lone speed. So if he can get the distance, he should be there as well.
Well, and he's going to be a square price, and we talked about Jace's Road earlier in the week. So a little Jace's Road, 12-1, baseline beater, 20-1 for Pessin, and Sun Thunder, the 4-11-12 for Frank Brightson. Frank, thank you so much. Good luck tomorrow, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks so much, Steve. Nice talking with you. Good luck, everyone.
Frank Brightson, folks. Brightson's down at the end of St. Charles and Carrollton, essentially. Kind of facing the face. Is that the levee? Or is that the, what do they call that? Is that the levee? I don't know what that is. It's down in that corner. I love that whole section. Oak Street, Bread on Oak, Camellia Grill. There's so much going on. But now, Brightson's, forget it. We'll be back there over and over again. Thanks to Frank. Thanks to Hammer. Mike Welch, Joe Christofek, Kevin Kilroy, Scott Shapiro, James Scully, Marcus Hirsch from Dubai, and most of all, thanks to Tom Ventura and Wojo and everybody here at OBS. What a fun week. Good luck, everybody. I'll have some Turfway and Fairgrounds action tomorrow on the website. We'll come to you from Gulfstream for Florida Derby Week on Monday. Safe travels. Talk to you then.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Freezing Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Racing fans, come join us for great racing and good times this weekend at Spectacular.